collapse, the conceptual idea of the collapse. They don't see it that it's just caused by the new medium. It's not a mystery, you know. They end up having a crisis and hating Christians or hating scientists or hating artists and hating everything, you know, because as McLuhan said, the electric media creates such a speed up in the 50s and 60s that everything begins to look menacing. So people divorce, the human chemical body, everything it does looks ridiculous because you're being affected by the major discarnate subliminal effect. So you don't know why, you could know why you find everything disgusting. You know what I mean? Okay.
Yeah.
It's an important point by McLuhan that everything, every chemical body or hardware reality in the new software invisible effect, all the old forms look menacing. And you think the world's polluted. You know? Okay, so so this comes back to the interesting thing of you bringing the Canadian sensibility in it. And I was listening to Stang posted an hour slack from one of the first conventions in 81 and 82. And I typed this out and pointed it out a year or so ago on our slack. They are saying, for some reason, it might be the convention in Chicago in 81, in which Stang had told me Skolnick attended, and Skolnick was invited, and he ranted, but he didn't know. Stang claimed that Skolnick was a bit puzzled about the environment he was in, because everybody else was probably ranting about the conspiracy, but they probably weren't as serious as Skolnick was, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But 81, 82, whichever conference it was, what do they call it? Divival. This guy starts saying, well, there's the sub-genies and the sub-deenies. It's right there.
Really?
Yeah, in 1981-2, he just says there's the sub... I don't know which he says first. There's the sub-deenies and the sub-genies. Or there's the sub-genies, but there's also the sub-deenies. He actually says it.
That's really weird.
Yeah. Well, that's the effect I had. I mean, that's the effects preceding causes. That's time coming back and telling you what's coming 20 years before.
In the least noticeable place. Like,
yes.
The most throwaway thing some subgenius ever said, yelled out at one of the divivals,
that's
was
right.
Actually a prophecy of what was going to happen.
Yeah, and it's prophesying me, and I'm the only guy who noticed it. So, and, you know, it's it got into that. Many things were ranted at those conventions, but that part got in there. And it's on the tape. You can go listen to it, and you'll hear it. I even give the coordinates on the hour, like it's at the 55-minute mark or something like that, you know, where you can hear it. Okay, so that's why, to me, it's interesting that Joan honestly confesses she doesn't get it for years, doesn't know what the hell I'm talking about. And it's let's look at her as American. You know, the American is inside the vortex, totally in the content, and cannot see the outlines that an Eskimo could see, or you know, somebody from Argentina could see, or the rest of the world sees, and can't see why the Americans can't see their own, quote, stupidity. But the Argentinians don't know why the Americans can't see it, and why the Argentinian will become an American in the end, because the environments are global that are coming out of America. So, it takes the interval position of being a Quadrophenic Canadian to explain these subtleties. That's why I'm the king subgenius. I'm there constantly explaining, like the psychiatrist. One of the YouTubes Buzz just made is me ranting at Spondo's Gallery about I'm advocating corporate psychiatry. And if you want to know how to be a corporate psychiatrist, you got to study my stuff. So I do corporate psychiatry on the financial collapse, on the macro level, and little micro cults like the Church of Subgenius, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, not, it's a cult in quotes. But but that's what McLuhan did. He said, we sat here in the coach house and just watched all these different groups and peoples mounting programs. And we knew they were all futile because they refused to recognize the real programming.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, that sitting back and just like, just watching people crash up against a wall they can't see.
Yeah, he said
funny position.
What was the last word?
It's a funny position.
Yeah, and you mean that McLuhan is in.
Yeah, yeah. sitting back and watching.
Yeah, and he said, you know, why he has one of his early quotes is, why the hell do people keep putting their fingers in the buzzsaw of technological growth?
Yeah, just very automatically.
Yeah. Okay, so, as a Canadian, you see, you had this dream, and you saw the Canadian sub Dini. That's what you saw.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? You, as a Canadian, you said there's a different version of the Church of Subgenius.
Yeah, I just somehow perceived that in New York.
Yeah, and it involved the, you know, Joan's interaction with her Canadian friend and Joan herself and Paul Laffoley. I mean, they would never invite me to speak at the disinfo.com, though people have spoken to Metzger through the years, and he says, oh yeah, that guy, that Bob Dobbs guy, got a lot of energy. What's the secret to having energy is seeing through the forms and not getting trapped. So what was interesting about the disinfo conference was we're looking at all these American numbskulls who were very popular and had big audiences and were, quote, successful in the American landscape, but all doomed. All were going to get collapsed. And they did. A lot of them did.
Yeah.
And right now, I can't go into that. I mean, I have an inside perspective on what's going on at disinfo.com right this week through a person. So
you could utter some sort of code word that none of us would get, but it would prove later on that you knew.
I didn't get the first. You said, what about Cold War? Say that again.
You were saying that I'm not going to get into that, or I can't get into that. I'm saying you could utter some kind of code word that none of us would understand anything, but then later we would all know that you knew.
Yeah,
or maybe you don't want it to be known that you knew.
And my source would be revealed.
Ah, yes.
My inside source is reporting this stuff to me, not maliciously, just telling me he didn't even know about my involvement with the disinfo thing. He's in touch with them and seeing things, and then he was telling me just the other day. What do we see now, or what's happening now? We reported the synchrony of the first session. Now we're having this one. Nothing you can report now, but is there any other? I would just keep encouraging you to using what you've learned in your Toronto life to keep looking at it, to keep seeing and perceiving.
Well, yeah, absolutely. Sorry, I didn't want to cut you off there.
No, it's all right. And it's just that, you know, Don Thiel writes about the tradition of the ancient mysteries, the esoteric Eleusinian mysteries or the priest cults, which would be the Ra'i function. He writes that they were in Egypt, and then they went to Rome, then they went to Paris, then they went to New York, and then they went to Toronto.
Woo-hoo.
He said that's what McLuhan was about, that he was the secret society. He was the one who was the expert and the new initiator. You know, what Frater says, I am, the magus of our age, and fallen from Crowley. But that's pretty amazing that Don Thiel, who's fully aware of all this history, and he was there in Toronto and was a witness to it, that he says, so I'm addressing this to anybody who's looking for secret society stuff. You don't go to Robert Anton Wilson or Krishnamurti or Gurdjieff. You go to McLuhan. And Don Thiel spells it out why. That the whole historical Ra'i principle ended up in Toronto as the last gatekeeper, the last Ra'i authority. And that authority that McLuhan had, also being a good Finneganese or a Finnegan's Wake or a Finnegan, he knew how to kill Ra'i. And he moved past Ra'i. That's why it's very interesting to listen to Dave Worster's 23-hour thing with me, because he is one of the best students of McLuhan.
Absolutely.
Well, you wouldn't know. You haven't. Well, you heard a bit of it.
No, I mean, I'm more saying absolutely about McLuhan. And,
not Worcester.
The Ra'i thing.
Yes. I just reiterate, you know, when McLuhan says under TV conditions the viewer becomes the screen, then that is the mystical principle of the knower becoming the known, and it's a collective global environment. And so the separateness that pre-electronic media existed in, ear, eye, and kinetic, is not possible under TV conditions. And that was the external human-made sign of a deep metaphysical thing that happened on the inner plane, on the astral plane, when we say that Rai returned to essence.
And when you're saying, you know, if people are looking for this occult secret society stuff, not just in the image of a kind of a Egyptian and Crowleyan sort of a tradition necessarily that way, but particularly in the way that history is described in, I read this book, The Spear of Destiny.
Yeah,
it's kind of like Christian magicians, or it's probably like the real Gnostic Christians in a Rudolf Steiner tradition and partial theosophy or something, but basically like a kind of a tradition of magic that would, you know, Crowley is definitely not like a good guy in that scheme. But they talk about like a secret progression behind history. And I was just looking at a passage the other day where in the sequel to the Spear of Destiny book, this guy was talking about people having to have these three spiritual faculties thrown into doubt specifically in these different ways and substituted and plugged up and distracted, and how one of them is distracted by pop music and trashy music sounds going around everywhere to drown out our sense of intuitive, more spiritual voices talking to us, and also just overloading of the technological image. And then, but then they kind of run out of steam going into the third, and they don't come up with any interesting fourth. Like, yeah, I feel like there's a lot of difference. It's not just the more Crowleyan or Robert Anton Wilson-ish stream, but there's most of these streams of mysticism and occultism could benefit extremely strongly from McLuhan. Like, particularly in that stream, it seems like McLuhan had, you could just read him as talking about the evolving history of human consciousness in as much of a sort of white magic Christian sense that you wanted, or like this holy Grail Christianity, as he called it.
Yeah.
And you can just look at it in that way and see McLuhan is talking about the stages of human consciousness growing, but he's actually speaking in more concrete ways about the senses being extended rather than all this vague talk about, like, capitalized abstractions of imagination and intuition phases coming in. Like, it just literally makes 1,000 times more sense to talk about the extension of the eye and the extension of the ear.
Yeah, and so that's why Don Thiel's book, The Virtual Marsh McLuhan, is an excellent book, because he goes into that, the implications. He understood the implications of, and you know, we're talking on the 14th, you know, it was Don Thiel's birthday yesterday, the 13th. The first session. So we're talking about just praising Don a bit for seeing in depth. And he's fully involved with the New York secret societies. He understood the art world and all that, but he knew that McLuhan had moved the Golden Fleece to Toronto. And so he witnessed
that. Fantastic.
Yeah, and so read his book, the chapters on the Gnostic interests of McLuhan and the occult interests. Don writes very profoundly about this. And
I really enjoyed that book.
Yeah, and but here's the joke, or the irony, or the pun, is that, you know, it comes, McLuhan gets it from Wyndham Lewis, who was an expert of the secret societies and made Fudd O'Crowley and the Apes of God and all that stuff that Lewis was. He was the original subgenius, and as we've talked about in the earlier hours. But remember, he was born in Nova Scotia, Wyndham Lewis.
Yeah.
And Nova,
off the coast, detached even from Nova Scotia.
That's right. And but the point is that Nova Scotia is investigated by the Sinclair family in the 1400s, probably before Columbus. And the whole myth of the Oak Island treasure may have something to do going back to that. But the Sinclair family, they set up the Rennes Le Chateau and Roslyn Abbey in Roslyn, in Scotland. And that's the Prior Scion, which my father was a member of. And so it comes back to Sinclair. Margaret Sinclair marries Trudeau. Trudeau, the peak icon for Canada, I mean, politically, while McLuhan was there. And there's me in the background. And later, I got to confront a young guy called Doug Sinclair.
Yeah.
Sinclair and Sinclair. There's the Sinclair family, I think, the ones who come to Nova Scotia in the 1400s. So there's a reason why Zappa put Nova Scotia on the cover of Uncle Meat.
We all just somehow intuited that place.
Yeah, and that,
that's the landform that resonates. Stick it on there.
Yes, and he did that in 1969. That's when the album came out, and that's when McLuhan is entering the Bilderberger inner chamber and making fun of their obsolete magic.
Yeah, writing a letter like, just in case you didn't get it when I was there, I was making fun of you all for not knowing shit.
Yeah,
it's really... That's pretty great stuff.
Yeah. He says, you guys all think you're pretty wealthy and powerful, but you didn't even recognize the most wealthy and powerful person when he showed up. Meaning McLuhan. I just realized he was brought there by the president of University of Toronto, whose name is Claude Bissell, which is B.C. backwards, Bob and Connie. So I rest my case in my lap again. So I don't know if there's any other things to say. I just think
it's getting pretty late.
Yeah, I just think you're a great Canadian, and you took advantage of being born in Toronto, and you're following the interests that were laying there, and I've helped you see what you grew up into.
Yeah, I'm trying to delve into the center of the mystery school of where I've been growing up.
That's right. It's right there.
I find it.
And you know,
yeah, I wanted to mention something else though, just on a somewhat McLuhan-ish.
Okay, hold that thought. I want to say this in case I forget it. But the Torontonians have an interesting superiority complex. You know, like they know they're in a pretty good city, at least up until the 90s. And there's all action there. And, of course, Neufeld created the whole musical scene motif that came out of that through Broken Social Scene. So Toronto is an interesting place in its sort of... not smug confidence, but a lot of people have fun there and can be challenged and not miss New York because they know they got a better scene or the roots of it set up down by McLuhan et al. In Toronto.
We don't have any overexposure here.
Yeah.
We don't have any big built-up identities of ourselves so much. And even creatively, like, Broken Social Scene becoming a big thing is a pretty, like, that's a pretty slackful identity.
Yes.
As far as that goes, it's not like grunge or New York punk, you know?
Yeah. Okay,
pretty
so
open-end.
You wanted to say, what were you going to bring up?
Just something that, right before all this really serious financial stuff started going down, I was looking at a section of the New York Times. It was probably a Sunday edition, but it was September 13th or 14th. Oh, I'm not sure exactly which one, but it had an article about how these automatic algorithms that do stock trading,
yeah,
that will, you know, see a stock falling a certain amount and then automatically trade on it,
yeah,
have been extended. For quite a while have been extending into going on the net and reading news articles so that when the news hits that people can respond to it, you know, faster than is humanly possible, basically, and have their algorithms just recognize if a news article has a company's name in proximity to more than one occurrence of pessimistic words, then they'll sell instantly ahead of the pack.
Yeah.
Or something like that, or buy ahead of the pack, but that that these kind of algorithms had caused some sort of big accidental crash devaluation of the stock of, I think, United Airlines, based on a fake, or a real but old, like a news item from 2002 that for some reason got re-uploaded onto a news server, and then these algorithms initiated enough selling to make all the other algorithms just sell, and United Airlines stock fell a huge amount for no reason.
Is that recently? Did that happen recently?
That happened, I think, last year, but the article about these algorithms was just in September. And
okay.
I remember it must have been the edition of the Times, literally the last edition of the Times before the bottom started falling out of all this stuff in mid-September. And so it was pretty interesting. I mentioned it on the phone when we talked last month, actually, that article.
Right, you did. Well, the only thing I can comment is that my mother was born on September 14th, so the user as a content remains stubbornly prominent here. Is there something else? Nothing more you want to say about that?
Not exactly. It's a really interesting story, and gives maybe some one grasp out of about 10,000 of image of the Android meme as just running on its own not even involving us.
That's right. No, it definitely is a good story to help people understand the Android meme. What was the topic that I said I announced in all Slack? What were we talking about 20 minutes ago? Because I'm at the site now. I was wondering if I could search.
A recording from a Devival where they said Subdini or something.
Oh, yeah, the Subdini. Yeah, that's right. Devival. Subdini, right. I just want to see if it comes up. And then I could read the actual. No, it didn't work. What do we call it? 1981. 1981 Devival. Okay, sort by date.
While you're looking, I'll mention there was when Anil Butt-Slack Stang brought up the King of Comedy movie, and then I had a little coincidence where out of nowhere Saudi in that thread said, "Hello there, Mr. Fancy Pants," and I've been listening to this song called "Hey There, Fancy Pants" like many times in the past week.
Right.
It's, this band Ween that put that played that song. They have their two members' names. I'm not sure if it, I guess it's not their real names exactly, but are Dean and Gene Ween.
Yes,
so Dean, and then it was like Geener and Deaner. So that just occurred to me as another. And of course Robert De Niro is Bob DN.
Bob? Bob what?
Robert De Niro is like Robert is Bob, and
oh.
De Niro is D E and then N.
Yes, yeah. With the Rai, with R I, you know, backwards, I R, but it could be Rai. Beginning of Rai.
In
De Niro.
Oh, De Niro. Okay.
Yeah. You put the I R in between the E and the N. It's got a little Rai embed. I'm just trying to think of what 1982. What would be the topic? What's it? Do they call themselves Convocation?
Devival.
No, I tried that. That's not working. So maybe they didn't call it that. I can't find it. It's interesting. What comes up though those who listened to him speak at a Star of the East convocation in 1911 said he spoke in the first person as a god. On April 25th, 1982, the Terror Center, headquartered in London, North Hollywood, a new age group led by Benjamin Crean, ran a full-page ad in 20 major papers. So are they talking about who spoke the Satanism? Speaking of Satanism, maybe this is the point. The guy who did the Church of Satan, Anton LaVey,
mm-hmm.
He was Little Tony LaVey in Worcester's Circle in 1961 in San Francisco.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, that's there's not many people Worcester hasn't run across of the counterculture, mystical, secret zone.
Well, that's something.
Yeah, and he was, he and Vern, his lover, used to talk about the little Tony LaVey. He was a little quiet kid sort of thing, you know. This is in 61. And then when he became this big icon of devil-worshipping kind of image, it would be like Stephen Harper suddenly is Frank Zappa or something, you know. And they used to just snicker about, you know, that little kid, look what he became down there in San Francisco. So that's what I'm reminded of when I look up this Satanism theme. But I don't know who was speaking in 1911. Who wouldn't have been Crowley? Somebody. Anyways, I think we're wandering here, so which is good. We're actually in the present doing research, which is okay.
And recording. I like it.
Yeah, recording our perusing the competition, the fraudulent, deluded ones. With that sort of ambivalent fade out, we wait for more Trontonian experiences and epiphanies to be recorded.
Mm-hmm. Well, today was the full moon, and I was pretty busy just hanging out with people, I guess, not to have a lot of media xenocronies, but maybe we'll be able to build some up before the next time to introduce. It'll be like, okay, Android meme, send me a xenocrony to kick off the topic of the next conversation.
Is Kenzie saying something there?
Yeah, she's just reminding me of something that I can't quite remember, but there was... Oh, yeah, of course. There was, today I showed up right when she had said to you, oh, he'll probably be home any second, and then hung up, and then I showed up right away.
Yeah, she did say that would happen. She knew your lifestyle, your rhythm, knew how long a cab would get there from Nigel's or someplace. But it's interesting the way McLuhan took on world culture. Took on all the heavy book people and, the heavy literary guys. I talk about broadcasting and broadcasting and narrowcasting and narrowcatching. What the American subgenies don't realize is that you can do McLuhan on a micro level now, as well as on a macro level. I definitely do McLuhan and LaRouche and Thompson and Croker and myself on the macro level on cash flow. But at the same time, as a full-fledged conscious quadriphenic, you must be nitpicking at three people on a little tiny, you know, insignificant form called Odd-Dob Slack at the same time you're on the mega level. And you can look at McLuhan's career, and he did do that. I remember speaking to his brother in 1971. His brother was running the front desk, and he said, we're staying here in Canada for the next couple of years. We think it's best to lay low for a while as a result of what we did in the 60s on the bigger scale. So even McLuhan was aware of how to oscillate from the big to the local and back or to another level. That's what we're training here. That's what the magic is. And you go to dobsound.com, you'll hear interviews with great precursors of the Canadian imagination.
Excellent. Well, I'm glad to be a part of it.
Yes, and you are. Okay.
Cool. So we'll talk to you soon then.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Ed.
Thanks, Scott, for being around and recording.
Yes, he's probably, he has to run to the other room.
You are welcome.
Alrighty. Cool. Well, I'll talk to you soon, guys.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Have a good night.
Yeah. Bye. We have an addendum here. It's about 10 minutes later after we stopped talking to Ed. I found the post I was talking about, and it's January 9th this year. 2008. I assume that's what it is because it doesn't give the year. This is January 9th. So I posted on Subgenius Hour Slack number 1076. And the title of it is listed is 1982 World Subgenius Convention in Chicago. So that's the title if you want to look it up in the Hour Slack archives. On that hour, I'm saying, one hears the following at about 38 minutes into the hour. Here's the quote. Sounds like a Tylenol party. I don't want no Arnold Palmer. I don't want no Yakutizma. I don't want no Subdinis. And then I write, and that's right when the Tylenol thing happened, in the September, fall of 82, I'm pretty sure. I remember that happening.
Tylenol?
Yeah, in 1982 that happened. So I don't know the date of the Subgenius Convention, but they're talking about Tylenol because that's in the news that year. And then I write, then just over a minute later, after this first part where they go, I don't want no Subdinis, somebody, I don't know if it's the same person, it might be, says, they say he's a golfer with rotten oranges, Subgenius, Subdinis. Right. He goes, Subgenius, Subdinis. Right, Subdinis are genius.
Really?
Yeah. I then post right after that, about 8 minutes later, I said, make that about 52 minutes into the hour, not 38 minutes. So I correct it. So then Mode Mac comes on and says, They were predicting the existence of this web page, and it's his ModeMac page on me. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
So he's saying they're predicting. Yeah, they were predicting his web page. I agree. And then I say, in response to ModeMac, where he says they were predicting the existence of this web page, ModeMac, Wiki, Bob Dean, I go, among other events, I predicted it in 1990 before Neufeld's album was a twinkling in Thal's guts.
Yeah.
Because it's that album.
Oh, good.
Yeah, it's that album that causes the problem, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
I predicted in 1990 before Neufeld's album was a twinkling in Thal's gut. What I'm referring to is the young 20 years ago version of you and other scholarly, like Monsquaz, scholarly Bobites. This kid was in high school and he was really tracking the jargon and analyzing it. And so he said, what happens after lockdown Bob Rule? And mm-hmm. I said, war breaks out within the Church of Subgenius against me.
Yeah.
And I said that before the album came out.
And here we are.
Yeah, here we are, 20 years later, almost. So then Ouroboros Rex writes in, after I talk about I predicted it in 1990 before Neufeld's album was a twinkling in Thal's guts. And then Ouroboros says, you mean your album, plagiarist?
Yeah.
And then I respond with to that by saying, it wasn't even mine. I don't even agree with the points it makes.
Yeah.
And then Adam Zervin comes in to wrap up, and this is on January 19th, so the thread starts the 9th, and most of the comments are on the 9th, and then you show up 10 days later, probably because you're at the, yeah, it's this year, you're at the library, you know, it takes you a while to catch up. And you respond saying, where I say, it wasn't mine, I don't even agree with the points it makes, meaning the album, Bosnia calls the album. And then you go, I agree with the way the guy laughs when you tell him your position on the environment is, turn it off.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember that now.
Yeah.
I remember saying that.
Would that be in January? Is it recent? Have we got the right year here?
Yeah, I guess so. That makes sense.
Because I won't bother, but if I go and find another topic, if I go like this, will it show the date when you get ones before this year?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that means, or if you click on my profile and then go to January of this year and see if that thread comes up in there.
Oh, yeah, right. Okay. All right, not going to bother checking that. So, well, if I go, maybe.
Yeah, that's cool. No, that's a great moment on that album. Like, yeah, yeah, turn it off.
Yeah, and Mark, it's funny, Mark Stallman, that, yeah, just, it does show the dates when it's the previous year. Okay, the point is, Mark Stallman, when he first heard the album, that was the line that really got him. Yeah, that and that he would play for friends, you know, and he thought that was pretty impressive. And, you know, whenever I hear it, yeah, it's pretty original. That's about 1988. What's your, like the guy says, you know, you're running for, like he goes, that, when I'm saying I'm going to take over the world, he says, well, that's pretty crazy, Bob. I think it's sort of like that. That's pretty crazy. And then he says, well, everybody's got to have an opinion on the environment. What's your take on the environment? Do you remember that? That's
yeah, and
real.
Then, and you've got this really very unexpected thing already.
Yeah, I have it already. Turn it off. And then he cracks up. That had never been done before, never been said, because everybody's thinking you're talking about the natural environment. You know? And, no, we're dealing with the Adam's second establishment.
Yeah, turn that off.
Yeah. Okay, we got that on tape.
Alrighty, cool, yeah, I'm glad you found that.
Yep, okay, well, thanks for cooperating with the addendum.
You're sure, sure thing.
Okay,
talk
to you soon.
Talk to you guys.
Yep.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Good night.